are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Happy Thursday, everybody. We're almost there, almost to the end of the week. Today, we are going to talk all things Jordan McLaughlin on his player profile. I also want to start by actually discussing a guest that was recently on the Rejecting the Screen podcast with Adam Stanko and Noah Kozlov, and that's Rob McLanahan, the longtime trainer for the Stars, I guess you could say, for a number of NBA players, including Kevin Love. So I want to talk a little bit about that and play a clip when he discusses working with Kevin Love and how important Love they're friends now. They have an extensive relationship, and not just him, but other former Timberwolves, including Derrick Rose, are guys that McLanahan's worked with. So I want to play a clip from that, discuss it a little bit, and then we'll get into looking at Jordan McLaughlin's rookie season with the Timberwolves in the 2019-20 campaign. Before we do that, though, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. So this podcast, again, Rejecting the Screen, one of our fantastic national podcasts here on the Locked On NBA Network, the ISO edition that they do every Thursday. If you missed the most recent edition, it was with Rob McLanahan, who, of course, is he was a former walk-on at Syracuse. He's a very popular NBA skills trainer, the most famous players, the biggest names on his list of guys that he's worked with. Of course, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love are probably the big four, but he's also worked with a bunch of other guys who had some time with Anthony Davis, I believe was on that list, certainly Derrick Rose, a bunch of other guys from the 2008 draft, which we'll get into in a second because that's a big part of this conversation he had. But go back and listen to the full episode. It's fantastic. Again, Rejecting the Screen is always great, so be sure to subscribe to that podcast as well on the Locked On NBA Network. But this conversation included a lot of talk about Kevin Love, a lot of talk about Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook specifically, and a lot of talk about the 2008 NBA draft, which of course was the K-Love draft, the one in which the Wolves selected OJ Mayo and then traded him for Kevin Love. That was the final draft that Kevin McHale was in charge of. Of course, the final draft before the fateful 2009 draft when the Wolves selected Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio over Steph Curry. But the 2008 draft was the Kevin Love draft and the Russell Westbrook draft. And also a really fun draft. There were a couple of really, really fun drafts back to back there in 08 and 09. So I want to play a clip, really just the Kevin Love clip, from this conversation about McLanahan working with Love, helping him extend his range, helping him add a 3-point shot to his game, really move him back from mid-range to 18 feet to a 3-point shot. And, also a couple of other interesting notes in here. McLanahan says that Kevin Love's actually his son's godfather. He's got a really great relationship. He talks about trying to kind of he's put in tough positions often where general managers, executives, you know, well-known guys, the Jerry West, the Doc Rivers, the Danny Ainges, the RC Bufords, et cetera, you know, are coming up to him and saying, hey, which guy would you take? And they're both guys that he trains with. And he's got to try and be honest. But he also, there's actually one point in this podcast where he says, hey, look, I can't tell you what I told this executive because I got to protect my guys. And trying to imagine the position he was in is really, really fascinating. But anyways, I want to play the clip where he talks about helping Kevin Love expand his range on his jump shot, work with him as he, got into the NBA. And then after he got in the NBA, he talks a little bit about Rick Adelman's system. And as Love was adding a 3-point shot, really year two, year three, year four in his NBA career, how Rick Adelman's pinch post game with Kevin Martin, the handoffs, the handoff and pop out beyond the arc, how that was so beneficial to developing Kevin Love's game and just how good that offense was. And I think it's easy to forget because on the heels of the Rick Adelman years, there were, the year with Flip Saunders, the year with Sam Mitchell, and then into the Tom Thibodeau years. So a lot of less beautiful offense, I guess you could say, although many of those teams were effective offensively. It wasn't quite what that Kevin Martin, Kevin Love, you know, pinch post action that they ran probably 3-4 times a game. And then that Ricky Rubio, Kevin Love pick and roll and pick and pop. And just even though those teams at best won 40 games was their best season, how beautiful that offense was. So I want to play that clip. And then we'll get into Jordan McLaughlin, then coming up here after the break. Oh, and also they talk a little bit about some of the work that Kevin Love's done after talking about his off-court depression, anxiety issues, and some of the things he went through. And McClanahan's worked with some other guys who have done similar things and are doing work off the court to try and drive awareness. And I think that's a really fascinating part of this too. And cool that they asked Rob about that. So there's a little bit of a discussion there, and I want to play the part that's specific to Kevin Love. That's the second part of this clip here coming up.
Staying on Kevin Love, what was it like? What was that first conversation like when you told him, all right, we're going to step back and shoot threes?
Well, it was funny because at UCLA, he didn't really have to do that. In college, I mean, in high school, he didn't have to do that. He kind of bullied people. But when he started slimming down a little bit early on, I'm just as well as anyone knew how good he could shoot. I mean, I'm in these workouts, mid-range, he's making, 80% of his shots, in a workout in mid-range. And I started saying, let's go to 18 feet. Next thing you know, he's just knocking knees down. And I remember saying to him, I'll never forget it one day, why don't we work on threes more often? He goes, I'd love to. But at the same time, back of my mind, are we going to work on threes if the coach is going to use you like that? But we continued to work on threes, and Rick Adler was great for him, playing at the pinch post, and Kevin Martin was there, and, they ran the handoff, fake handoff, that kind of stuff, jab shot. So he started really making a large percentage of threes, and I'll never forget when at the All-Star game, he won the three-point shootout. And 2 weeks later, with thank you from him, he sends me the jersey he wore framed in the shootout to my house. Just thanking me, that was kind of the first one to say, we need to work on threes, man. You're making just as many as any guard I train. So that was a pretty cool, gift to be handed over to me.
As Kevin Love's friend, when he came forward and started talking about all the things that he had been dealing with privately, and now it was something that was more out in the open, how much did you notice he changed off the court when he sort of released that publicly?
Yeah, big time. I mean, I mentioned it to him, I think, months later, how relieved he seemed. And Kevin is you would never maybe know it, but he's a very, very tense guy. He's got a little temper on him in a good way. High strung guy, always, was on point with his diet, obviously, and all that stuff, and just was kind of just seemed like he was stressed out a little bit here and there. And I had no idea any of this stuff was going on, like anybody else. No, and I think that was the point of the article. He didn't want to tell anybody. But after that came out, and the next thing DeMar DeRozan comes out, and, I think Michael Phelps came out and said he was suicidal and things like that. So Carson Daly came out to Kevin Love. And so all these guys were like thanking because of Kevin. They were doing the same stuff. So the fact that Kevin helped himself is one thing, but the thousands of people he's helped since then, really, Kevin's the first one to ever do it. And I'm so happy. The Arthur Ashe Award that he won 2 weeks ago is, I told him, I texted him, that's the biggest accomplishment you've ever had. They won an Arthur Ashe Award. Like, who would have thought you coming out with an article saying you have anxiety would have led to saving maybe thousands of people. Who knows? Maybe more we don't even know about. And you win the biggest award you could ever win at the ESPYs. It had nothing to do with you scoring a basket. Nothing. So that was huge for him. And it's something he's going to do this post-career probably even more.
Again, good on those guys for asking Rob those questions about the depression and anxiety and how Love's dealt with it. Great answer from Rob. Great to hear some of that stuff. Isn't it fascinating to hear that? The breakdown of working with Kevin Love and working with some of these other guys. Be sure to listen to that whole episode again. That's Rejecting the Screen over on the Locked On NBA Network, or also part of the Locked On NBA Network, of course, along with our other, this podcast, 29 Other Team Podcasts, the Hollinger and Duncan Podcast, the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, Locked On NBA, tons of national shows in addition to each of our team-specific shows. So be sure to check that out. All right, before we get into talking about Jordan McLaughlin and breaking down his season, his outlook for the future with the Timberwolves, let's talk about rockauto.com, today's title sponsor. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person at the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for other important things like the mortgage or food. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, 100% or more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. They always offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody, does not require membership or account login. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. And best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Again, "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Okay, talking about Jordan McLaughlin, I think we need to start by looking at what he did last season, the 2018-19 season. He played for the Long Island Nets and didn't get a chance to play at the NBA level. Remember, he was a four-year starter, a four-year player at USC, and was not drafted, didn't have spectacular college stats and wasn't really seen as somebody with a massively bright NBA future, of course, not being drafted. So he played for the Long Island Nets. And when the Wolves signed him to the Summer League team in Las Vegas last year, I looked at his line at Long Island, saw 15 points a game, 4.5 assists, 33.5% on three-pointers, a good free throw shooter, but didn't get to the line. You know, he got there about three times a game, which is about right. Shot 42.5% from the field. And I thought, this guy seemed okay in the G League. And then you go back and look at his time at USC. He averaged over 12 points a game every single year. He was a four-year starter. He basically started every game except for one game as a freshman and averaged for his career 13 points, nearly six assists, 37.9% from three, nearly 40% his senior year. So you look at that and you think, okay, maybe he was just adjusting to the pro game. I guess there is a little bit of upside, but again, he's older now. He's 4 years of college, 1 year of G League. He's a rookie this year he just turned 24 during the season. So I didn't honestly have too much in the way of high hopes for him coming into Las Vegas Summer League. In fact, even after Summer League, I thought this is the first time I'd watched him play. I mean, I hadn't seen him play at Long Island. I hadn't seen him play at USC other than maybe a game here and there, and didn't have any strong opinions or real memories of him as a college player. And I wasn't really struck by him in Summer League. He looked like he could orchestrate the offense, but he's maybe 6 feet tall at best, listed at 5'11", and wasn't a dead-eye shooter, wasn't super athletic, seemed to be an okay defender. Nothing really stood out. And I thought to me that he looked like a guy who, there's a dozen to 20 of these guys who are fringe, third point guard guy, G League guys, could go to Europe and make a good living. But the Timberwolves signed him to a two-way deal anyways, and I was not super impressed with that decision personally. He went to the G League. His numbers in the G League, again, after it being not all that impressive with Long Island last year, this past season in the G League for the Iowa Wolves, he started 23 games. He averaged 16.7 points, over six assists per game. So both those numbers up significantly from his time in Long Island. His steals per game were up by 0.7. His three-point percentage jumped from 33.5% to over 35%. You look at his rate-based numbers, rebounding, defensive rebounding, overall rebounding, assist rate, steal rate, block rate, usage rate, all up. The only number that went in the wrong direction was turnover rate, but that's to be expected if he's going to take on more responsibility. True shooting, effective field goal percentage, three-point percentage, as mentioned. Overall field goal percentage was over 50% as a point guard with a usage rate of 21%. All those numbers really impressive in the G League. So the Timberwolves gave him the keys as the backup point guard, so the keys to the second unit, I guess, as the Wolves were making some trades, as Shabazz Napier was moved, and then eventually, Jeff Teague was moved first, and then eventually Shabazz Napier was moved. At the NBA level this year, McLaughlin averaged 7.6 points, 4.2 assists per game, and just under 20 minutes a game, played 30 games, started two, shot just under 49% from the field, 38.2% from three on 2.5 attempts per game. So he was shooting threes. I mean, his three-point rate was 0.427. So for every field goal he shot, you know, that's almost half of his shots. Essentially 43% of his shot attempts were threes. Free throw rate was okay. And he shot, you know, 66.7% when he got to the free throw line. So all around a solid year for a rookie who came out of the G League. I mean, you look at all the advanced metrics suggest that he was legitimately good this year. Watching him play, it was obvious that he has a great handle on the offense, an awesome handle on the pick and roll. And what really surprised me was his quick first step. There was one game where he had two big dunks. He had probably two or three other dunks that were just surprising to see a guy who's short of 6 feet just exploding at the rim and dunking. But it wasn't just that explosion. It was the first step that I think surprised the guys that were guarding him. He was able to get around his defenders and get to the rim quickly. He was adept in the pick and roll. He never really looked for his own jump shot. I don't recall him shooting off the dribble very much at all. But when the ball rotated to him and he was left open, he knocked down shots. I mean, again, he shot 38.2% on threes on 2.5 attempts per game. He was a good jump shooter. And that was a huge part of his game this year. Defensively, he was solid. Again, he's not big. He doesn't have a huge wingspan. He's not super athletic, but he's tough. He fights through screens. Basically, some of those things that D'Angelo Russell doesn't do well, McLaughlin does. And so if you look at what maybe Russell's ceiling is on defense, I mean, neither one of them are incredible athletes. Although again, McLaughlin has some good quickness. Russell's a bigger guy. Both of them have good court awareness, good, a good sense for where they are on the floor, what they need to be doing, where the ball's going, et cetera, getting into passing lanes. If Russell does some of the things McLaughlin does in terms of playing hard, the Wolves could have a pair of solid defensive point guards. McLaughlin's not a world beater on defense, but he is solid, and I think that's important. That's what you need out of your backup point guard. There weren't really any major deficiencies outside of the fact that he's not really a threat to score on his own. But again, if you think that and you talk yourself into it and you shade him one way, or you think, McLaughlin's not really a threat to score, he can blow by you and throw one down at the rim. He can score in the paint. He's decent at getting into the paint and distributing, although for the most part, he was attacking once he was in the paint. I want to get to some of our stats from B-Ball Index here in just a second. We talked about them for the first time on Wednesday's show in relation to D'Angelo Russell, but they've got some numbers on Jordan McLaughlin that kind of show just how impressive he was offensively as a rookie. And then I want to kind of tie that into what I think his role could be next year. In terms of deficiencies, again, really, I think it's just, you know, what's the ceiling? What's the true threat when he's on the court? He's more just a solid all-around player who can make you pay if you think that's all he is. If you leave him open, he'll knock down a three. If you try and cheat on a pick and roll, he can get past you in a step and get to the rim in the blink of an eye. He can distribute a little bit. He can get in passing lanes. Again, he's a solid defender. He's not going to lock down, you know, a Kyrie Irving or something one-on-one, but he's going to give it his best. He's going to guard, you know, sufficiently in the pick and roll. And I think that's exactly what you want out of your backup point guard. He's not going to be a guy who necessarily needs the ball in his hands a ton. Although given what his role was, his usage rate was relatively high at a shade under 16%. I want to get a little bit more into his usage rate when I get into the B-Ball Index numbers and start looking at next year. So that's what we're going to do next year. All right, we're talking about Jordan McLaughlin, Timberwolves backup point guard, of course, on a two-way contract this last year, just turned 24, and likely will be the Wolves backup point guard this next year. I want to talk about some data that we have from our great friends at B-Ball Index. It's a new service, relatively new service, that we have just started partnering with at the Locked On NBA Network. B-Ball Index's innovative data tools and 500-plus player profiles are available to everyone for just $5 a month or $50 a year over at B-Ball Index. That's B-Ball-Index.com. So the numbers I want to look at are related to his offensive game. First of all, just looking at some of the percentiles that he falls in as a ball handler, he's in the 74.7 percentile. So basically the 75th percentile in terms of his perimeter shot and his effectiveness. Again, that takes into account basically proximity of defenders, assisted versus unassisted, and a variety of different really stats that you can find at NBA.com stats or stats.nba.com that they've put together and come up with this percentile for perimeter shot. They gave him a B+. In the 75th percentile there. He's not great off the ball. They have him in the in the 44th percentile, so a C minus there, but good in the one-on-one game. Again, as we talked about, can blow by defenders with a quick first step, 77th percentile there, B plus. Finishing at the rim, an A minus, 89.4 percentile. Compare that to D'Angelo Russell, who we've talked about. That's one of his weaknesses, is finishing at the rim. D'Angelo Russell got a B there, 67th percentile. McLaughlin in the 89th percentile at an A minus. Karl-Anthony Towns also an A minus. Those are the two best grades on the Wolves for McLaughlin and Towns. Looking at some of the other numbers, playmaking, McLaughlin has a B plus there, 78th percentile. And perimeter defense, he's a B, 68.8%. For reference, D'Angelo Russell's a C, 49th percentile. Jarrett Culver is 56th percentile, C plus. Josh Okogie is a B minus, actually, 65th percentile, so slightly below McLaughlin. Again, just for some reference there. And also, McLaughlin's not a great rebounder, but then again, he's a point guard. And also, he's 5'11". So those numbers help paint us a little bit of a picture of it really kind of, it's almost confirmation of what we've kind of seen with our eyes, that he can make you pay if you leave him open. He can blow by defenders if you cheat one way or the other, and he can finish at the rim and he gets into the paint with that quick first step. The other thing that B-Ball Index has shown us that I'd like to point out, they give out what's called badges. So if you go to their website, again, bball-index.com, they have badges for each of their players, or for a number of different categories that they then assign to players. There's also a point system, 1 point for a bronze, 3 points for a silver, and 5 for a gold. So Jordan McLaughlin has a couple of badges. He's got a couple of bronzes. So he's got a bronze in interceptor, which has to do with getting into passing lanes, obviously getting steals. He's got a bronze under giant slayer, which has to do with his diminutive size and some of the success that he has, but he's got a gold badge for unpluckable. Let me read what unpluckable means. Let me pull up the definition here for you. The definition of unpluckable is: it identifies guards and wings with high on-ball usage with a low turnover rate from on-ball steals relative to the time they possess the ball. So they have to be a guard or a wing. They have to have, basically it takes into account the turnover rate, looking at their on-ball steals, time of possession per game. And then they also get rid of small sample sizes. And McLaughlin played enough this year in 30 games, again, about 20 minutes a game, 30 games, which is half the Wolves games that they played this year, that he played enough to earn this badge. Looking at his rate-based statistics on Basketball Reference, his usage rate was a hair under 16% at 15.8. His turnover rate was only 13.7%. His assist rate is 31%. So the assist to turnover ratio is very good for Jordan McLaughlin. And basically, guys were unable to just steal the ball from him. He didn't get pickpocketed. He took care of the ball, which was refreshing. Again, we talked on Wednesday's show, D'Angelo Russell's turnover rate was over 18% with the Timberwolves. McLaughlin's here below 14%, and that matters. You can't have your backup point guard turning the ball over when he's orchestrating the second unit. We talked a little bit the other day about Jarrett Culver possibly getting some time as a playmaker on the second unit, but when we get to him, we'll break this down a little further. But those B-Ball Index numbers are not kind to Jarrett Culver in terms of his playmaking ability, also his ability to avoid turnovers. Again, things, by watching the Timberwolves last year, these things should have come through pretty clearly, but it's nice to see it backed up by the numbers that kind of confirm what we were seeing, that McLaughlin's good at some of these things. You know, Culver's bad at some of these things. D'Angelo Russell's kind of a mixed bag on some of these things. And these numbers are really giving us a pretty clear picture of that. In terms of the role next year for Jordan McLaughlin, I think he starts on opening night. Or I shouldn't say starts. I think opening night, he is the backup point guard to D'Angelo Russell. The only way that differs is if they have the ability to add somebody in the draft, maybe, that they feel like can step in and be backup point guard from day one. They have McLaughlin's bird rights. He's a restricted free agent coming off of a two-way contract. I believe the qualifying offer is about $1.5 million. So I would expect him to be back, and I would expect him to be the opening night backup point guard for the Timberwolves. He may get some run alongside D'Angelo Russell, depending on how the rest of the offseason shakes out and how much the Wolves might want to see Russell with, you know, play off the ball a little bit in more of a scorer's role. We don't know how much that would happen. I don't think it makes a ton of sense unless you're playing against smaller teams where you can get away with that, especially defensively. Certainly, they're both good enough shooters that could work. But I think really he's a straight, basically what we saw this year, that's going to be his role next year. Probably at best 20 minutes a game, 15 to 20 minutes a game. But if he can do that, shoot 38% from three, low turnover rate, high assist rate, high free throw rate, you know, put up 7 points and 3 or 4 assists a game, that would be a perfect backup point guard for what the Timberwolves are looking to do and really what any team would be looking to do. So I would expect that to be his role as we get into the 2020-2021 season. All right, on Friday's show, we're going to continue to roll through these player snapshots from the 2019-20 season and looking ahead into next season. And of course, we'll update any news, especially in the ownership front. There hasn't been much this week, but if anything breaks, of course, we will be all over that here at Locked On Wolves. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. A reminder that that data we just talked through comes from B-Ball Index. Their innovative data, tools, and 500-plus player profiles are available to you for just $5 a month or $50 a year over at bball-index.com. You can subscribe to Locked On Wolves on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Also, today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.